Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast titled, Two Approaches You Must Consider When Architecting Radar Systems. My name is John McHale, Group Editorial Director with Military Embedded Systems Magazine and moderator for today's event. Our speaker today is Mark Zwick, Principal Applications Engineer at RTI. Mark Zwick has more than 30 years' experience with distributed real-time systems, having worked critical programs for the U.S. Army, Navy, Air Force, and NASA as a prime contractor, government support contractor, and a vendor, as well as commercial systems. He has experience with all phases of system lifecycle operations and has helped author open system standards for the U.S. Navy. Mark has been involved with the development and deployment of many military and commercial radar and sonar architectures. Now, before we get started, I have some housekeeping announcements. The eCast will consume about 35 to 40 minutes, leaving the remaining time for the question and answer session. And before we get going, we want to make sure we point out three very important buttons on your screen. First, please take note of the Enlarge Slides button. By clicking on this button, you will be able to view the slides in full screen mode. The second important button is the Forward to a Friend button, which enables you to send an email to as a friend to register for this event. The third button on your console window allows you to enter questions in real time. We will do our best to address these questions during the closing Q&A session. If you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, one of our technicians will respond back to you during the eCast. Please note that as much as we'd like to, we may not get to all of your questions today. In that case, someone may get back to you after the eCast with more information. This eCast will be archived online today and be available for 1 year. There will also be an MP3 version of the event available. And now I'm pleased to turn it over to Mark Zwick of RTI. Mark?
Hey, everyone. Good morning. Good afternoon. I hope everybody's doing well. It's kind of a strange thing talking to a screen, but we'll see how we do. The title of the webinar, Two Approaches to Consider when Architecting Radar Systems, I'm going to beg your patience about. We'll get to those two approaches nearer the end. What we're going to talk about first is a background about the great diversity of radar and basically applies to other sensor systems, their commonality in architecture and more specifically software architecture, what those generic components are and how they communicate, how data-centric design patterns lay over those components and those communication patterns, and how DDS is uniquely suited to those things. And without some level of data commonality, you have to be able to make sense of the information, of course, and we talk about how to accomplish some of that and the summary where we get to the two points. So to go forward, you know, we're going to start at the beginning, usually a good place. And what is a radar? Actually derived from an acronym. It's become a full-fledged word in the dictionary. It is a device or system for determining the presence and locations of an object. Using radio waves. It's what a radar is. The significance of radar goes back to World War II, and in World War II and every conflict since, radars played a major, in some cases, a determining role in the outcome of those conflicts. Also keeps us safe every day as we move about the country. So, you know, radar is, in addition to being a fascinating technical problem, is a huge part of our everyday lives and part of ensuring the safety of and our livelihoods. There's a huge diversity of radars. So I'm going to go through a couple different types of radars and their form and function, which is largely determined by their antenna shape. This first picture is E-2C U.S. Navy aircraft. The radar on top is a rotating radar performing air search. Different from other radars, for example, the next radar, which is also searches the air, but searches it from the ground at a fixed location. So you have radars that move, which in the movement will have to be compensated for, radars that are fixed. And these represent radars that are single systems. We also have radars that work cooperatively and represent systems of systems. And this slide depicts several radars on the mast of an aircraft carrier. All of the photographs are public domain, by the way. There's nothing special about these. The large square radar actually rotates 360 degrees and was first deployed in the 1960s in the Vietnam conflict and is still deployed in the U.S. Navy and other navies today. It's an air search radar. The little bar below is another rotating radar, which is performing surface search. Variety and diversity of radars are required to fulfill different missions. An aircraft carrier is interested in point defense and air surveillance, and so that's what these particular antenna are designed to do. Getting out of the naval domain, you're also going to find that you have radars on aircraft. This particular one fits within the nose of a fighter aircraft. It, again, is another air search radar. We also have mobile ground radars. This one is non-rotating. It is a phased array radar. Again, each radar's antenna is indicative of its function. This radar is being used to track very fast-moving air targets. And another example from the Navy with a variety of radars, the radars in the center of the diagram, the two identical ones, are pulse Doppler radars. These are actually the first radars I worked on over 30 years ago. They are still deployed by the Taiwanese Navy on former U.S. aircraft or former U.S. ships. It gives you an idea of the scale and complexity and the life cycle of radar systems. Systems that are deployed for 30 years get developed and redeveloped over and over, and they don't get redeveloped on the same time scale. We don't get do-overs. They are done incrementally, and systems and subsystems are updated and upgraded incrementally over long periods of time. This is important to the software architecture and the lifecycle cost, that open architectures and DDS go a long ways to supporting. This more modern surface ship, again, has different radars in different form and function. Notice the phased array radar on the front face, a huge advantage in a way forward for surface ships because of the lack of moving parts. Anything that has to operate or be available on a 24/7 basis benefits from not having to rotate or move. And finally, we have some things that not all dishes are radar. In this particular example, we have radars in the top and the bottom, and these other dishes are simply to emit radiation. They're not actually not used as tracking devices by themselves. This is just a really cool picture of a really big dish in the California desert. But however, it's not a radar. It's got the radar detection part right, but it doesn't emit. It's just a huge radio telescope. However, it does use the same software design, basically, without using a transmitter. And if you've been to any number of airports, you've seen the Doppler weather radars at different places, and you see domes, which are basically protective structures, and the radar dishes actually are rotating inside of those domes. So this is just to give you an idea of the, like I said, the huge diversity in form and functions of radars. So having one talk to talk about all of these is a little challenging, and a big part of it is figuring out what they have in common. The software architecture is the biggest thing that all of these systems have in common. You start out with a couple basic subsystems. Of course, you have your antenna. You have to be able to transmit radiation in order to locate something in the general case. And then you need to be able to receive those electromagnetic transmissions and process them in order to figure out where things are around you. Then they need to be provided to a user subsystem. So for the most basic fixed point radar system, these are the basic components you need. But we saw a lot more complexity in the different examples I provided. We saw radars that move. We saw radars that have autonomy. We saw radars that cooperate with other systems. So as these systems grow and evolve, we start having other subsystems added to the mix. One of the first things you'll see added is a command and control system. So if the radar has variability in its transmitting or receiving schedule, if it has multiple configurations because you can't commit all of the hardware to perform all the different functions at once, you need to be able to have some kind of command and control system coordinating aspects of the radar system. Another thing that gets added, especially when you start moving the radar around on a ship or an airplane, is a time and position subsystem. Sometimes this will be integrated with a receiving or transmitting subsystem. Sometimes it will be separate. But you have to know the location of a radar in order to provide meaningful information about what it's tracking outside of the system. You also likely have a storage subsystem. We have safety critical radars. We have mission critical radars. All of that data often needs to be recorded for either archival or for playback or after action analysis or, you know, for intelligent operations later. So another significant subsystem that gets added to radars. And again, these are not necessarily all developed from scratch at once. Each of these subsystems has a potentially different timeline for development, and having them work together, you know, in different time periods is a challenging thing. Likewise, a tracking subsystem. So I have lots of signal processing data, which gives me, you know, the proverbial blip on a radar screen that tells me where something is relative to where I am. But if I want to associate that blip with an aircraft and identify it, then the radar also needs to include tracking. Now, all of these subsystems are areas of study in their own right. There are filtering algorithms. There is mechanical design. All of these things have to go on in parallel in order to build a radar system in any reasonable time. So, again, in terms of nomenclature, the things closer to the transmitting system and receiving system are called the front end of the radar. These have harder real-time characteristics. They typically have timeliness deadlines that have to be met in order for the radar to function as intended. The softer real-time functions are referred to as the back end. Time and position can be on either side of this, depending on requirements. But the back end systems are softer real-time. They have to have the data. They have to get the data. They don't necessarily have the deadlines that the front end requires in order to provide minimum functionality of radar. So when these things are built, and this is exactly how they are built historically, you start with a data flow from the antenna to from the transmitting system controlling the emissions from the radar, data coming back into the receiving system, being signal processed, and ultimately displayed to the user in some form. So again, this most basic combination of radar components, and it's a data flow from front end to back end. Things start getting a little more complicated when I add command and control. Now I have to issue requests for change to the different components, and I need to be able to monitor that change in order to ensure it occurred. So I end up with point-to-point communication methods. Now, originally, and then, you know, some of these systems, like I said, dating back to the 60s, these are actually physical cable connections. And even then, we had open standards for how to talk over those physical connections. But as we replace those with networks, in the first iterations, we kept these as point-to-point communication patterns. That produced its own set of interesting problems as we move forward. So I add a time and position system, which talks to everything. And again, I have a large number of point-to-point connections that have to be implemented in order to have everybody have the same time and everybody understand the current position of the radar in order to do the processing. My storage system is going to talk to some subset of those. It's going to mostly collect processed data in most cases. It's going to collect command and control data so that events can be replayed, and it's going to collect any user actions. The tracking subsystem, again, talks to a lot of other subsystems. It has to be controlled. It has to know time and position. It has processed data to store, and users are highly interested in tracks. Now, each of these subsystems consists of multiple processors and has multiple internal and external connections of their own. So if we continue down this path with point-to-point connections, we pretty much turn the screen black with lines of communication. Then I have a cooperating system I want to bring in, and I don't even know where to begin. I'm going to have to create a server. I'm going to have to aggregate some data. I'm going to have to tap these different connections. I've created a huge problem. And this has happened, as I said, over the natural evolution because of the technologies available. More recent radar systems are developing data-centric architectures. In a data-centric architecture, each of the subsystems is writing data to essentially a bus. So instead of talking to an endpoint, instead of providing my sensor data to a direct user of that sensor data, I'm going to write the sensor data to its own entity. I'm going to provide some location transparency, and I'm going to talk to the data instead of talking to an endpoint. This greatly simplifies the modification of systems. It is a major component of both open systems architecture and why DDS is so effective in radar systems. When I start adding components, if I bring in a command and control system, I now have new kinds of data. I have commands that are going out, and I have state data that's coming back. But again, I'm talking to the data. I don't have to talk to physical endpoints. I can command the receiving subsystem, but the receiving subsystem is an entity. And if I want to record that command to that receiving subsystem, then I simply subscribe to that existing data. Likewise with time and position data. Instead of having multiple point-to-point connections, I essentially logically multicast that data to my bus and make it available to everybody. Now I can add subsystems without great breakage. And again, since these systems are being developed on different timelines and different schedules, this represents a major step forward in reducing lifecycle costs and being able to build systems incrementally. Storage system will access the data it's interested in. The tracking system can add the track data to the existing set of data. Now, having expressed and exposed all of this information as data available on the network, I can then bring the cooperating system in, and it has a knowledge of the available information on the network. It can select which data it requires and access that data without having to redesign the internal workings of multiple subsystems. Now, a lot of these subsystems also have, as I mentioned, the front-end systems have harder real-time requirements. The back-end systems have softer real-time requirements. But they all have to meet deadlines in order to function properly. DDS, and specifically RTI DDS, reaches very far down into the real-time arena. This slide is actually 10 years old. DDS since this time has reached even farther down into the extreme real-time world of requirements. It's really the only technology that takes you from the edge that is very close to the front-end sensor of a system with detailed information and can bring that information effectively all the way out to the enterprise. None of the other technologies we're looking at in terms of web services, JMS, Java, CORBA, or even real-time CORBA meet those needs. Real-time CORBA meets the need in that it is predictable. It doesn't meet the need in that it is fast enough or performs the task with the minimum number of components or hops to get the data out of the system effectively and in time. So we talked about two things. We talked about modularity, and we talked about data-centric architecture. These are characteristics which are exemplified by open systems, which DDS supports. So in a definition of open systems, they have to be defined so that multiple organizations can work on them cooperatively. Obviously, that's the case for radar systems. We just saw a very clear example of that. They have to have requirements that are stable over a sufficient length of time to allow for concurrent development. Radars obviously have that. They need to be documented fully and openly to the development community, which radars have and have not had, subject to security requirements and other things. Sometimes you cannot document the data sufficiently openly to get the widest, broadest possible brush and get all of the benefits of open systems. Now, the government and the Navy in particular is working very hard to, within its secure domain, open these requirements and be able to achieve the interoperability such that multiple vendors can build components for the same system. Again, this is a function of how long these systems live and how important lifecycle management is to the total cost of systems for the government in particular. And they're not under the control of any one firm or vendor. This has been the case and not been the case at different times over the years for different various government programs. So some of those key non-functional requirements that are required really to get an open system include these four things. Interchangeability or portability. I need to be able to take a time and position system from one ship or one aircraft, and I want to be able to move that to another aircraft without having to completely redesign my system. I want to be able to take it from one DDS vendor to another DDS vendor. This requires standards and open systems. I want to be able to replace systems. That is, I may want to bring in a new time and control time and position system, which operates at potentially twice the rate of the existing one. It doesn't have an equal capability. It may have a higher capability, but it is a suitable substitute. Definitely a use case we've used in radar systems over the years. We want to be able to extend things. We want to be able to add a third system that aggregates data from two existing systems. Some of the systems we looked at, the radar position data is relative to the radar itself. I need to add data about time and position in order to make that data meaningful outside that particular platform. I need to know where that platform is in the world in order to make the data meaningful. So I need to be able to add a third system that combines those things and extend that and do that in a cost-effective and lifecycle-friendly way. And I need to be able to integrate systems. I need to be able to add external systems as we looked at in the existing example and be able to move systems forward and easily integrate them, not spend endless cycles trying to move things forward. The way we can do this is with that data-centric solution. So each of the subsystems we looked at earlier might very well have, and in fact does have, its own communication network within that system. And they can include a variety of data types. So my front-end system, my receiving system, can have interfaces to time and position and be receivers of that data. It can provide state data. It can provide sensor data and respond to command data. It has all of that data internally. It also has its own internal command data, not all of which goes out into the center line, which would be your system file. Likewise, my tracking system is going to provide track data. It's going to provide display data, state, and respond to command data. It's going to have all of those things locally, but it's not necessarily going to provide all of that information out to the bus. It will provide subsets of that. My time and position system will talk to state and display and provide time and position, which, for example, could be subsystem C. Now, if all of these systems change over time, if my bottom subsystem were a time and position provider and it did double its rate and the existing subsystem A could not tolerate that data rate, I'd have to do something in order to accommodate that change. The way that open systems can operate and providing that is providing mediation between the local buses. So mediation can serve to mediate transport level issues such as data rate, and it can serve to mediate data needs such as changes in units or position, units or frame of reference. And over time, those mediation components can grow and actually exist on the edges of all of those external subsystems. But I still can have a external representation which stays the same. And so I can adapt to change piece by piece, providing mediation where it's required and allowing direct communication where it's not. So I need to have what's referred to as technical interoperability. If one of my networks is UDPv4 and the other one is UDPv6, they're obviously not going to talk directly. I need to have a means of providing that interoperability, and that's where mediation comes in. Mediation also provides syntactic interoperability. This is where I need to have a common data structure. I need to have a position that is represented by three variables, and I have to have semantic interoperability. I have to make sure that my data definition is known in each of those domains so I can either provide the data directly or convert it if necessary. So, you know, an example of technical interoperability is being able to translate between different physical transports in different subsystems. And syntactic operability, making sure that my data specification is the same, and semantics, making sure that my meaning is the same. And all of those things are required for open systems. All of those things are supported with a data-centric architecture. And we're going to get into now how DDS goes about implementing some of those things. So DDS's core architecture is built on standard and open interfaces. The DDS core, whether professional, micro, or certifiable kernel, has pluggable transports. So I can use an intra-process, a shared memory, for inter-process on the same machine. I can use A-Ring ports for secure solutions. I can use UDP or TCP sockets, and can develop even other custom protocols in order to bridge and mediate between those different buses. So at the external level of RTI DDS, I have the OMG DDS API. So the Object Management Group openly specifies as the DDS interface. This makes your product portable across multiple DDS vendors and keeps you from getting locked in to one specific vendor. The transport API is what allows us to inside of DDS to provide all of those transports. In fact, applications with any one or several of these transports operating currently. And the wire protocol used to translate the data is also an open OMG standard for real-time publish-subscribe. So I'm providing open interoperability at the wire protocol level, and I'm providing an open API at the application software level. This is giving me the interchangeability, the aspects of open systems that I'm seeking to be able to contain. Finally, for those of you who are part of the FACE consortium for future airborne, getting tongue-tied. FACE has a transport services API that is also an open standard, which sits over top of a DDS, which provides a publish-subscribe API for onboard avionics systems. So DDS, and specifically RTI DDS, then, is providing this location-independent communications. Location transparency is a big part of what DDS brings to the table. It's what allows me to talk to a track entity as opposed to talking to a specific program endpoint. So I'm decoupling the providers and subscribers of data, but making sure they meet requirements through quality of service. But I have to have the physical transports in order to interconnect these. So we have a rich set of those transports. We touched on them in the previous slide. Our micro product has an inter-process transport for talking within the same logical space. We have a shared memory transport. So in the case that loopback communications over UDP is not accept or TCP is not acceptable in a local machine. We intend to add support for A-ring ports to be able to provide communications between secure partitions and safety secure partitions. we were going to provide UDP by default communications with a RTPS defined reliability protocol, which eliminates the latency, unbounded latency problems associated with UDP for talking between nodes and over any Ethernet or any IP-based network. We have a low bandwidth transport, which we use for talking over WANs or for satellite communication, in which we have both compression and control over the data going over those links. And because of the pluggable architecture, we can generate just about any kind of datagram transport that's required in order to talk between these different communication networks. And transports can be configured per application. So I can use transports where they're required and not use them where I obviously don't. So in comparing different technologies and what they provide, DDS is the only one that really hits all the bullets. It provides intra and inter partition, intranode, multiples of those transports concurrently. It provides one-to-one, one-to-many, many-to-one, and many-to-many communications. Okay. Overlapping this, we have DDS design patterns. So we go back and revisit our bus picture. If I want to provide track data from my radar, and I want to provide it outside of my system, that track data may be, for example, relative to a ship or relative to a changing position on the ground. If I'm providing that data in relative terms to those points, I also have to say where the radar is. Otherwise, I don't know where in the world that track is, and any kind of command and control intelligence application that ultimately needs that data, or any other system with its own relative coordinate system, needs that data. It has to know that originating data. Now, there's a couple ways of getting this out. In some cases, in order to get sufficient resolution of the final data, that time and position data actually has to accompany the radar data that comes out. In other cases, for command and control and C4I, that kind of time synchronization isn't required, and you need to know the approximate position. So these can be sent independently to the data bus, and the external subsystem can consume the time and position and the track data and reassemble a picture based on that approximation. I can do better by providing that mediation and combining those three different topics, if you will, in DDS terms, using that data and morphing that into a single track picture, which provides me with an Earth-oriented track more suitable to my external subsystem. I can also provide mediation on the other side. There's a lot of cases where those radars, as we saw on the ship, provide very high-rate data. A lot of systems which want access to that information cannot afford to communicate with 20 or 30 or 40 of those radars and accommodate that full data rate, so they need mediation on their side. So I can mediate on one or both sides of the interface, or I could even decide that I only want to mediate on the external subsystem if I have no place internally to run that mediation. So DDS and this data-centric architecture allows me to build and control and change my system over time and be able to accommodate changing requirements. Mediation is supplied by RTI provides an RTI routing service that can perform this mediation. Remember, we talked about pluggable transports. So the routing either side of a routing service can support different transports. So I can go from UDPv4 to UDPv6, and at the same time, I can perform automated data conversion. I can configure an XML and provide plugins to be able to convert data as it crosses a routing service. Also, I can control these routes dynamically. So increasingly, we're entering a world where systems, and especially external systems, are going to come and go and enter and leave. Routing service allows me to bring up components, automatically discover them, and not create the data flow until all of the components are in place. When they are fully discovered, only then will the data flow actually happen across your mediation tool. And all of this can be remotely controlled and configured via DDS topics dynamically. As I look at these design patterns and I look at these data types, they all fall into predictable DDS design patterns that have been used and reused in huge numbers of operational systems at this point. Display state and command data fits into a pattern that we call objective state. Sensor data is a high throughput case where you have to pay great attention to aggregation of data on the network. You have to pay attention to the actual MTU size of the hardware and be able to configure your software to accommodate those things. And you want to be able to do that without changing application code, and DDS enables all of that. Track data time and position are a classic one-to-many distribution case, which needs to be done efficiently and in some cases reliably while being done efficiently. Again, uniquely suited to DDS design patterns. Objective state is a classic DDS pattern. It's also an important pattern because it goes directly to the data design issues you accomplish with radar. Many systems do not distinguish between the intended state of a system or commanded state of a system and the actual state. So there's really three states going on when I talk about the state of a particular endpoint or the state, for example, of a transmitter. The transmitter has its current state. It has the state in which it is intended to be in and a state that's being requested perhaps by that command and control subsystem. So I have a couple roles here. I have an effector who is actually the transmitting subsystem is providing its current state and where it's currently commanded. Now, if the system is at rest, these are going to be the same. But as soon as I issue a command, I have a commanded state which is different from the actual state of my transmit. My requester, on the other hand, provides the requested state and observes both the current state and the objective state. These are very often munged into the same thing. It has been known to produce problems in systems where they are not explicitly defined. And of course, you can have a third-party observer who looks at the state as well. It's not just the commander who is necessarily interested in the state, which is, again, the location transparency and the data-centric architecture allows to get that data out through DDS. So an effector in DDS terms will write a requested state, and the effector will receive that requested state and then provide the objective and current state. So a couple of DDS quality of services that apply directly to this problem. State data is well suited to a setting of the durability of data. So DDS supports data lifecycle for particular states. So I can provide that state to any application at any time it joins the system without having to periodically publish it. I also want to provide some level of history of that data. I might want the last five state transitions, and I'm able to provide that with DDS. On the command side of things, I typically only will have from one given requester, I'll only have one commanded state, so I will generally keep only one item of history on that. Okay. One-to-many design pattern is one of the original design patterns with DDS, and the availability of reliable multicast for sensor data and for track data is a huge benefit to any number of systems. It greatly offloads the provider of the data. which is essential for especially sensor data and track data in radar systems. So some of the benefits of multicast include really being, like I said, being able to offload that provider of data. Data can be reliable or best effort in DDS. There are some challenges. Reliability is not free. So in a perfect world, you would expect one-to-N to achieve or IP multicast to provide all data to everyone equally, but when I provide reliability, I have to be able to acknowledge and guarantee receipt of that data, or at the very least provide some level of retransmission in the case of data loss. So you get less than perfect, but so much better than unicast in terms of being able to distribute high-put data in the one-to-many case. High throughput, I have to determine whether my samples are arriving continuously at a high periodic rate, and I have to deal with saturated CPUs and saturated transports. So in order to deal with both of those, RTI provides synchronous sends, batching or aggregation of data to support high periodic rates, supports multiple reliability paradigms. We support explicit acknowledgement of all samples, even for multicast, and we provide a NAC-only protocol, which greatly reduces the potential load at some loss in theoretical reliability. It also supports the ability to receive data directly in a middleware receive thread or in application threads, so you can manage the performance of the receive side, which in multicast becomes the new bottleneck. Okay. Then over constrained networks, I mentioned the low bandwidth plugins and the ability to support actually a multi-channel feature where, based on data filtering, we can send the data over different NICs to different endpoints in cases where we need to even further offload the writer. Lots to consider in terms of throughput. So it is a tuning game between reader and writer that RTI allows you to engage in by changing quality of service and not having to change application code. Key for reliability is determining the desired behavior, and DDS supports all of these behaviors. It supports anything from declaring failure and stopping to just writing best effort, to delaying writers, reporting errors, controlling the number of retransmissions, all supported by RTI DDS in terms of being able to fill pipes for the transmission of high-rate sensor data. And then we get to the data, and I see I'm running short on time here, so I'll try to push through. A model is just what it is. It's something used to represent something else. The data model is describing the things that exist in your domain. Now, data models range from entity relationship, very high-level descriptions of data and their associations, down to the transport level of data. And we're going to talk really today just about the platform level of data. So the entire data model provides the context and semantics that were so important to interoperability. But the online messages can be compact. So it all depends on how much data we determine to be at rest and how much data we determine to be in motion. Radars over time are highly optimized for the data in motion to be distributed and the data at rest to be separate. This produces some problems because the data at rest some of the meaning of the data at rest tends to get lost over time. So making sure we explicitly document and capture that information and being able to move it forward with the system is an important aspect of interoperability that's actually beyond the scope of DDS itself. What DDS is very good at is supporting interoperable data models on the wire. In addition to the interoperable wire protocol, a standard-based description for the schema of data is provided by DDS, which provides type safety, interoperability across languages. It is a wire-efficient protocol. And because it makes the data aware, it allows that filtering process for mediation to take place in third-party tools and in the RTI routing service. Languages supported include C, C++, Java, and Ada. We have a data compiler that produces the code to support all of those implementations. So what were the two things we talked about in the beginning anyway? Radar systems are extremely long-lived. Okay? They're much longer than a typical consumer life cycle. In order to support those systems, you need to actively design that change, and data-centric architectures and open systems are the way to achieve that. You need to anticipate that you're going to have multiple disjoint technical refresh cycles. Open architectures and standards are absolutely essential to containing the costs. Nobody can afford to go back to a system and start over every time. And know and capture your data. Capture your data at rest and capture your data in motion. So having an architecture consistent with the long life cycle of radar systems is critically important. The other thing to consider that you really should consider is keeping your focus as a developer of radar systems or subsystems on your domain expertise. It's what makes you valuable. Mechanical design, algorithm design, custom hardware design, there are endless variations, all for the different tasks that these different radars have to afford. What RTI is good at and really excels at is being able to manage the plant and communication areas, which are going to change even more frequently than the requirements associated with radars. Using a DDS or an open communication middleware isolates your software from processor and network changes as the constant hardware refresh cycle goes through. It protects you. You really can't make end-of-life buys like you used to, so you have to adapt to new and evolving hardware. And the changes are, in fact, inevitable over the system lifecycle of radar systems. So maintaining your focus on your domain expertise and using communication middleware in the same way you use operating systems to isolate yourself from change in communication paradigms is an incredibly valuable thing. Okay, and DDS, for those of you interested in experimenting with DDS, is available for download, courtesy of our marketing department, and can be found at rti.com. And I want to thank everybody for their patience in walking through all this. I hope it was of some benefit and interest to you.
Thank you very much, Mark. Excellent presentation. And now we'll go to the audience Q&A. Our first question, does DDS support rate monotonic scheduling applications?
Yes. RTI DDS provides a completely open architecture. It is a multi-threaded architecture, and control of the priority and scheduling of all of those threads are available through quality of service and without changing code. Sends of data are done synchronously from application threads. So for those of you who are familiar with rate monotonic scheduling, everything that is executed has to complete within a known timeline. And so DDS provides that by giving you visibility and control into the threading architecture and prioritization control over all of the individual threads.
Thank you, Mark. Next question, why not use TCP sockets for reliable communications?
TCP is a IP protocol that provides point-to-point communication. It's a point-to-point paradigm. So you basically fall into the trap with the initial diagram with all the black lines. It's not very extremely different from having those physical connections, except now they're logical connections between all those endpoints. So you can't take advantage of multicast and reliable multicast, which is important for radar systems. and you also run into a problem of unbounded latency with TCP. There is an algorithm built into TCP for send windows, which on some operating systems is configurable and changeable. But essentially with TCP, you do end up with unbounded latency when you get into data loss scenarios. RTI-DDS and its reliability protocol gives you complete control over the reliability protocol and how long you're willing to wait to retransmit data before you declare failure or take another action.
Thank you, Mark. Next question from the audience. Do ASA-based radars use this DDS architecture?
I'm not sure. I think we're going to move that comment to we're going to take that one offline.
Okay.
I'm a little hesitant to get into to specifics.
Certainly. Mark will answer that question online. Offline, excuse me. Next question from the audience. Are there tools for monitoring the performance of the DDS bus and the DDS consumers?
Yes. So we provide multiple tools for the monitoring of DDS. We provide an administration console that allows you to, at a very light level, look at the discovery or the location transparency aspects of DDS, where all your DDS entities are located, where the readers and writers of data exist. You can view them by DDS topic, or you can sort them by DDS endpoint. We also provide a more complete monitoring solution that allows you to collect all of the DDS statistics about DDS entities, about throughput, and aggregates that data to the even to the machine level or at the system and subsystem level, and publishes that data to a GUI over DDS. The routing service provides additional monitoring capability, again published on DDS topics, that you can collect and monitor for throughput and flow control.
Thank you, Mark. Next question from the audience. TCP/IP can be auto-negotiate. How do you do this using UDP in a variable data rate context?
Let's see, it would help me to see that.
You should be able to see it in the Q&A button.
Good. Yeah. Is that under?
Open your console. On the upper left, click Q&A.
Oh, gotcha. So TCP/IP can auto-negotiate. Can be auto-negotiate. I'm going to ask him to send that one to me directly. I want to make sure. I'm not sure I understand what is meant by auto-negotiate. UDP is, you know, TCP/IP is a data stream protocol, so it's providing a byte stream. And I believe by auto-negotiate, he's referring to managing the byte stream as a function of available bandwidth. UDP is a datagram protocol, so we're sending the data as it comes out. DDS has multiple means of controlling the data rate and the retransmission rate, including an asynchronous publication that allows a separate thread to be able to manage the sending of data. That's basically how you can control with a flow controller the send rate of data independently. In many radar applications, the data, especially the sensor data, needs to come out as it's being produced, and a datagram format such as UDP is often more appropriate.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Next question, how does DDS perform discovery of applications?
DDS doesn't have a special sauce for discovery. Discovery is actually performed using the DDS, the same transport and DDS protocol that applications are using. We have multiple, so discovery is, again, how we achieve that location transparency that allows us not to to decouple providers and subscribers of data so that they don't have to have that point-to-point connection. Now, in very large systems, discovery becomes something that has to be managed because of the amount of data that's being exchanged. And we are working on multiple plugins to the existing low bandwidth plugin provides one means of reducing the bandwidth associated discovery. But we're looking at additional methods of being able to perform static and semi-static discovery and reduce the bandwidth depending on how variable the system has to be.
Okay. We have a follow-up question from how do you manage data rate? I think you kind of cut into that. Did you want to? From the same gentleman.
Yeah, so DES by default is doing a synchronous send. So I can expand on that a little bit. So the application is in control of how fast the data is being sent. That is the default behavior. RTI DES, again, provides this notion of an asynchronous publication on which you can install a flow controller. And if you you do that, you can control the actual data rate. I hope that helps. If it doesn't, please feel free to contact me after the webinar.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. I have another question here. It's not exactly written clearly, but maybe you can decipher it. I think they're inquiring about multiple possible writers' sources of a particular information item. Can you respond to that comment?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, DDS is not just a one-to-many protocol. It is a many-to-many protocol. So I can have multiple providers of data, and DDS will allow you to uniquely identify the data from each of those sources and, in fact, keep different logical cues on the receive side for the data from each of those providers. If it is, in fact, the same data that's being provided from both providers, that is, you're in a fault-tolerant situation, DDS provides an ownership capability, which is an active fault-tolerant method in order to determine which data is most appropriate. We also provide design patterns for semi-active and passive fault tolerance if those are required as well. But it is a many-to-many. I didn't focus on many-to-many because in radar systems, the one-to-many is often the more critical time-dependent capability. But many-to-many, especially in the command and control domain, is important as well. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Now, for the next question from the audience, and actually it's going to be our last question, it's coming from me. That was an excellent presentation and talking about how radar and open architectures, et cetera. Do you see, with all the upgrades of radar systems going forward, and you know, worldwide I think the market's estimated to be by some analysts around $4 billion for radar systems, military radar systems, do you see the military, as they try to make that ease of use and save money in the long run during their upgrades, do you see this increasing? The use of systems like DDS, open architecture, how do you foresee the market only continuing to embrace this type of technology?
I see that it's just absolutely essential. You need to be able to reuse components across systems. The government has an intense desire, given your current DoD budgets, in order to do that. And nearly all modern radar systems that we're seeing, and even the redesigns of old systems, are looking for ways to adopt these concepts incrementally, which is something else that we can help with, from RTI. We've engaged with people on completely new radar systems, but we've also helped people with these legacy systems begin to open their systems. So it's not something that has to be done all at once. It's something that you can break into systems all the time. Because almost nobody can afford to start from scratch, almost nobody does.
Thank you very much, and that brings us right to our time limit for today. I want to thank Mark Zwick for speaking today and RTI for sponsoring today's event. Going forward, we'd like to tell you about this will be online immediately today, archived, and it will be available as an MP3 play as well. Please look forward to seeing you on future webcasts, and thank you for attending today.